started. Bod o pawb, a croeso i digwydd heddiw. It's always harder than I think to say the Welsh at the beginning. Good morning and welcome everybody to the launch event for our latest report produced as part of the IWA's project on land use, funded by the Friends Provident Charitable Foundation and the Esme Fairbairn Foundation. My name is Auriel Miller and I'm director of the IWA. For those of you who don't yet know us, the IWA is Wales' leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, and here is a copy of the latest Welsh Agenda. The next one will be out in May. We provide platforms for robust comment and debate and our agenda setting events like today's. Most importantly, we're a membership organisation with nearly 1,000 members right across the country and much further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations who have made today's event possible. We're politically independent and we don't represent a sector, trade or interest group. Instead, we seek to bridge policy divides, institutional divides, and show what might be possible when we work together differently, seeking consensus where possible, and robustly challenging the status quo when we need to. We're especially interested in identifying and facilitating long-term change on issues that will make a difference to Wales's economy and democracy. This year, we published a series of three papers on the foundation economy, looking at regulation and innovation within it, reflected on and responded to the UK government's levelling up plans, and we're in the middle of recruiting for a new media and democracy policy role. We've also run our highly regarded training sessions on how devolution works, supporting people across Wales and even England too, to get their heads around how to help shape effective policy in a devolved context using their own experience and expertise. If you'd like to know much more about what we do, please join us as a member and help shape Wales's future with us. This new piece of work, Our Land, Communities and Land Use, originally grew out of our influential project Re-energising Wales, which ran from 2016 to 2017, which I hope you'll all know about. During research for our 10 evidence papers that backed up those final recommendations that I just showed you, we spotted an opportunity to look at land use policy in a way that would get to the bottom of how we in Wales might use one of our greatest assets to best effect, economically, environmentally, and socially for local communities. So during 2021, we undertook research into community access to land in Wales, both by conducting desk-based research on the policy contexts in Wales, Scotland and England, and by holding roundtables with policy experts, community groups and farmers. We found that communities in Wales are the least empowered in Britain, but more on that later. A little bit of housekeeping before we start. As this is a webinar on Zoom, participants are muted by the host and we're going to use the Q&A section for questions. So that's in the bottom right of the bar at the bottom of your screen, of the Zoom screen. We really encourage you to introduce yourselves and engage with each other in the chat. And it's nice to see lots of people saying hello already. Please do remember that all chat and questions are recorded. We're going to be keeping the event strictly to an hour to avoid Zoom overload. And if you feel inspired to tweet, we hope you do, you can at us at @IWA_Wales. And we suggest using #IWALand as a hashtag. We're going to put both of those in the chat for you now. Just a reminder that chat and questions are recorded and the video and audio of today's event will be made available via our YouTube and podcast channels. Before we talk through our report though, I'm going to hand over to Becca Clark, who's Director of Green Squirrel Community Interest Company, to give us an on-the-ground view of setting up a community group and gaining access to assets in Wales. Becca, it's really great to be able to welcome you this morning. Would you like to talk us through how things have worked for you, please?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. We're really excited to be here and be part of this discussion. We think it's really important. I'm going to share a few slides with you quickly because I think there's some really interesting points that could be illustrated by some pictures. My name is Becca. I'm from Green Squirrel. We are a community interest company based in Cardiff. Let me just make sure you can see this properly. But yeah, so I'm Becca, I'm from Green Squirrel. We are a helping hand for individuals and communities and organisations to learn about and respond to the climate and nature crisis. But what I want to tell you about today is Railway Gardens, which is a community site in Splott that we've been working on with local residents to develop since 2015. It's a long and tumultuous story, but I'm going to keep it to 5 to 10 minutes. So let's see what we can squeeze in. So I moved to Splott in 2014, and I was intrigued by a patch of land that was behind some houses on my street. And in 2015, after a local community garden was actually closed and taken away from us, we started to make inquiries with the support of the Community Land Advisory Service, Social Farms and Gardens. And we began a process with Cardiff Council to find out if we could access this piece of land for community use. And the next slide there shows us exploring this piece of land. So at the same time, we started talking to our community about what they might like to see us use this land for. Originally thinking they might just want to develop a growing space, but actually they had so many ideas. Thanks, Harry, for taking over from me there. So the vision developed into a site that would include shipping container workspaces for local businesses. If you want to show the next slide for me, Harry, that'd be great. Accessible toilets and the community building for workshops, events and meetings, as well as growing spaces and an outdoor learning area for play and young people to come and learn. We knew we had our work cut out for us, but we had no idea of the scale of the challenges we were going to be up against. So just to name but a few, the first big challenge was acquiring the land from the council. It wasn't a simple process. We went back and forth for several years. We were told yes and then no, and then yes again after a local petition. And eventually we were able to negotiate a 20-year peppercorn lease. But again, this wasn't straightforward, and with no funding yet to support the project, we were relying on the support, free support from organisations again like CLASS and individuals and expertise within our community. The next big hurdle was planning application, getting that in and getting planning approval. As a small community group with just a couple of members of staff and lots of community support, we were really determined, but we didn't have the expertise to do this alone. It was a big feat. And then came the SUDS approval. So some of you might be familiar with this. SUDS is Sustainable Urban Drainage. And in Wales, in January 2019, it was made legislation to submit a SAB application alongside any planning application and development. We didn't know anything about this. We now know quite a lot about it. And we actually have created an opportunity to educate our community about how water moves on land that you've developed and how we can collect it off surfaces, slow down its flow into the drains, and improve its quality to mitigate things like flooding and the impacts of climate change. So we've learned a lot about that. We couldn't do that on our own. We needed support from experts, and we went to people like Arup and Atkins Global, and we were lucky to receive some pro bono support. Got no idea how much that would have cost otherwise. And then we had to acquire funding for the project. And as the project was growing in scale, this pot of funding that we needed was getting bigger and bigger. This was also a challenge because, again, we were a small organisation, we had a low capacity, and it's easy to look at a project like this and think, yeah, there must be lots of funding pots out there for it. But actually what you don't see is the huge amount of work and late nights that go into making these applications and making them successful. So we did have quite a few rejections over the years, but we've now managed to raise over £800,000, and we are hugely grateful to the support of our funders, the National Lottery, who told us to just keep going, and we've had lots of support from the Cooperative Foundation and Welsh Government as well. And our community have also chipped in and done a lot of fundraising to get the project to where it is now. We had many, many other barriers and challenges along the way, some of which I've had to kind of put to the back of my mind to be able to drive this project forward. And the strain on ourselves as a really small organisation has been huge. I'm now able to happily talk about this project and be here today, but I'd be lying if I said there hasn't been tears at some point and moments when we thought we weren't going to go ahead with the project. It wasn't going to be possible because of the barriers. And we were really distraught that this was going to mean letting our community down after building them up and getting everyone so excited about the potential of this project. But that's what's kept us going, the support from our local community. If you want to move to the next slide, I think there's a few more showing our local community. This was the moment we got the lease and we opened the gates and we've had some lovely events on the land even before it started to be developed. So our community really kept us going alongside the support from organisations like CLASS and the individuals who have been volunteering their expertise and the funders that have supported us along the way. So where are we now? If you want to pop to the next slide. So we've signed our 20-year peppercorn lease. We signed it in autumn 2020. We have planning approval, we have SUDS approval, and we have almost all of the funding we need to get the site up and running for an initial 3 years with plans to make it self-sustainable. So this is when the drainage started going in. These groundworks began in November last year, and we now have our drainage system in, our rain gardens in place, a water connection, accessible toilets, 8 shipping containers ready to use. If you want to go to the next picture, I think you can see those. They're getting ready to be converted into workspaces for local and social businesses. And some large tree planters have started to go in as well. And I've just been told that next week we're going to be connected to the electric. So that's another milestone. So I still have to pinch myself that this is actually happening. Because it's been such a roller coaster over the last many years. But Splott really deserves a project like this, and the community have fought long and hard alongside us to make this happen. The site's going to become a place for our community to come together, to learn, to share, to grow, and to become more resilient in the face of the climate and nature emergency. That's all from me. I hope that gives you an overview of what we've been through. I'm very happy to answer any questions that come into the chat and throughout the Q&A.
Super, thank you very much indeed, Becca. That's fantastic. We're going to take questions at the end all together with questions to Harry as well. So there are Becca's contact details and one of the best hashtags, Be More Squirrel.
Thank you.
So well done. We are going to move now to Harry's presentation, please. So I know that there's going to be lots of examples of other things similar to Green Squirrel happening right across Wales. So do please take the opportunity to share that in the chat, as well as your questions. Harry, we've got about 20 minutes now for you with your presentation before we open things out to hear from everybody who's with us today. So here we go. Over to you, Harry.
Sure, thank you very much. Will is controlling the presentation. Will, if you could just get past the on the ground part, because that was Becca's part there. She had her own slides. So hi everyone, thanks for taking the time out of your day to be here. We've been really heartened by the interest we've had so far for the project. This report is a short scoping paper, which we're hoping to develop into a much larger project. During that research, so hopefully we can use the momentum gained so far to help develop that project and make it as impactful as possible for the wider project after this that we're hoping to do. As Oriol mentioned earlier, this report initially came out of the IWA's Re-energising Wales project. During that research, an opportunity was spotted to look at land use policy in a way that could get to the bottom of how we in Wales might use one of our greatest assets to best affect for local communities. During the process of writing this paper about land and communities, it became clear that it wasn't necessarily sensible to separate out community access to stewardship of and ownership of land from other community assets, like, you know, village halls, pubs, chapels, and more. As we'll see, Scotland, England, and latterly Wales have all taken their own paths on this, which brings us to the policy context in Britain. So firstly, we'll talk a bit about Scotland. Within the three countries that make up Great Britain, it is Scotland that has implemented the most powerful community empowerment reforms. These community empowerment measures came from the land reform movement in Scotland. They've got a legacy of sort of large, distant feudal landowners. So the governments in the devolved era from a range of political parties in Scotland have sought to diversify land ownership and give communities more control over land. Although it was originally targeted just at land and in rural areas, the Scottish government has subsequently extended this to urban areas and assets as well. So a bit like our project, we started looking at land and then we realised that this is about all community assets. So a couple of the measures they have in Scotland: communities in Scotland have a right to buy. Essentially, they can register an interest in an asset, which includes land, but it could be for a wide range of community assets. And if that's approved for the list by Scottish ministers, when it comes up for sale or transfer, the community will have the first right of refusal to buy it. And the price is based on an independent market valuation, and then it goes to a ballot of the community. Scottish communities, with the approval of the Scottish ministers, now even have the power to buy assets without a willing seller if the asset is deemed to be derelict or if it was intended for sustainable development. So you can see that communities in Scotland really do have a lot of power. First right of refusal over assets, and could even buy them even if the sellers want to sell them in certain narrow cases. These statutory rights are underpinned by the Scottish Land Fund. This fund is just about to increase to £20 million a year. It's being increased. They've been putting more and more money into it throughout its lifetime, and it's grant funding for all community-owned projects. Awards can be anywhere from £5,000 to £1 million. Although Scotland has passed multiple pieces of community empowerment legislation, I think we're up to four now, it's set to continue on this journey with another piece of legislation promised as part of the recent SNP and Green coalition agreement. That brings us on to England. In England, most community rights are underpinned by the Localism Act of 2011. This requires councils to maintain a register of assets of community value, with communities able to nominate assets to this register or to these registers. When an asset of community value is proposed for sale or transfer, communities have to be notified, and a 6-week moratorium on sale begins, with communities then allowed to make a written request to be treated as a potential bidder. If they choose to do this, a new 6-month moratorium begins on sale to anyone but the community. And after that 6-month moratorium ends, the owner is free to sell to whoever they choose at whatever price they choose. So this is known as England's community right to bid. So whereas Scotland, they have the right to buy, England, they've got that community right to bid, and the seller can eventually sell to whoever they want. So they could just wait out the clock if they wanted to, but it certainly gives communities that first right to bid. The Localism Act also contains provisions for a community right to challenge, which allows communities to bid to take over the running of local services. For those of you involved in politics, you remember David Cameron's big society idea. That was kind of part of that, communities running local services rather than the state. But it also includes the community right to build, which allows communities to bring forward small scale development without the need for planning permission, which can be useful for things like community led housing. A community right to reclaim land also exists in England, and that allows communities to request to take over land they believe is underused or vacant. The UK government's also got its community housing fund, which provided funding for the community led housing sector in England. It's worth noting at this point that under the terms of that Localism Act, the Welsh government could have implemented these English measures in Wales, but chose not to. The minister at the time said they were looking at developing a different Welsh system, but this has never transpired. And that brings us neatly onto Wales. Despite having a reputation, as we all know, as a nation of strong communities, Welsh communities are the least empowered in Britain. There are no real statutory rights for Wales. Unlike in Scotland and England, here, there is no right to buy, no right to bid, no right to build, no right to challenge, and no right to reclaim land. It is very hard for communities to challenge or shape what goes on in their area without the goodwill of other organisations. They are largely at the whims of the market. As mentioned, the Welsh Government previously said it was looking at developing a Welsh scheme of community empowerment. It had established a Welsh Government Community Assets Working Group to develop a scheme similar to that in England. The Welsh Cooperatives and Mutuals Commission was also established, chaired by an ex-Labour minister, and this commission found that the Welsh Government had the opportunity to go further than Scotland and England on the topic of community assets. It recommended the Welsh Government consider legislation to enable communities to list their assets and to have a first right of refusal to bring these assets into community ownership. It said that we could go further than Scotland and England by including things like sports clubs as community assets. However, all of these plans were quietly dropped with pretty little justification given, to be honest. Instead, what we do have in Wales is community asset transfers, which are on more of a guidance basis than a legislative basis, that allows communities to take over ownership of and management of facilities when local authorities or other public bodies decide to allow this. However, this process is driven by local authorities and public bodies rather than communities, and the Welsh Government's own research stated that it is usually austerity measures that make public bodies release these assets. It is not all negative in Wales. The Welsh Government runs the Community Facilities Programme, a capital grant scheme for improving these community facilities. It also recently launched the Community Asset Loan Fund. The Community Asset Loan Fund is new, but the Community Facilities Programme in particular does make a real difference, and there are some real success stories about them enabling community ownership in Wales. However, as we pointed out, these schemes aren't as generous as in Scotland, and funding is only one side of this agenda. Community rights are obviously important too, as we've seen from England and Scotland. We've found that the failure to introduce any meaningful community rights in an era of austerity has meant that community facilities such as ex-youth centres, ex-chapels, pubs, land and more that communities would have wanted to maintain for themselves have likely been lost to the market. And we would all probably have such examples from our own areas. And that brings us to the policy roundtables that we did. So policy roundtables. As part of this research, we also held two policy roundtables to dig further into the findings from our desk-based research. One with communities to find out where they felt systems in Wales could be improved, and one with farmers to ensure that those who do so much to underpin the economies of fragile rural communities aren't undermined unnecessarily by reform. So firstly, we'll look at what we found in the communities policy roundtable. Our communities roundtable found an almost universal experience of an arduous, demoralising process in Wales. To be more precise, we found there wasn't really a process at all. Taking over assets from public authorities was said to be time-consuming and frustrating, and there was very little experience at all, really, of taking over privately owned assets. As we've seen, whereas English communities can benefit from a moratorium on the sale of privately owned assets, and Scottish communities can have the first right of refusal to them, Welsh communities have to compete in the marketplace for these, no matter how important they are to the community. However, they are at a disadvantage as private buyers they are competing against will often have a legal identity already, funding, experience, maybe in a draft business plan. Communities hoping to buy an asset will have to quickly establish this legal identity, secure funding, hope they have relevant experience within the community, and draft a business plan whilst trying to beat other market buyers to the asset. Community groups told us that their experiences of accessing publicly owned assets in Wales, sometimes they're astounded by the delays and that the grant funding they received was slowly eaten up by the lack of a clear process or any statutory rights. And that with some public bodies, they face an us against you attitude with attempts to run down the clock so that they couldn't access the assets. There was a consistent complaint of groups being treated with a lack of respect. For some of the communities, it is hard to overstate how negative their experiences were. And this has a negative impact on outcomes too. For example, one group seeking to provide community-led housing for local people stated that due to their lack of rights, their ownership over that housing had been diluted, meaning that the community could eventually lose that vital asset. They had little choice but to agree because of the policy context in Wales. The group stated that they also feared more deprived communities would not have the spare time or resources to go through with the lengthy and ill-defined process that exists in Wales. When we outlined the policy measures taken in Scotland and England, there was widespread support for policies that could empower communities. There was perhaps, unsurprisingly, given the stated experience, universal support for a Scottish-style right to buy. And then that brings us on to our farmers roundtable. We held a roundtable with farmers from every region of Wales, spanning a variety of, a lot of different varieties of farmers in different areas of the industry. Despite this geographical and industry spread, we found that almost all the farmers were extremely active members of their rural communities. Although, you know, we know these farmers often provide a large part of the economic basis for rural communities, they actually do far more than that. They sit on school boards, pay out of their own pockets to facilitate school trips when the local school can't afford to do it. They allow wildlife groups to set up on the land for free and pay out of their own pockets to in the bits of land they aren't using to plant sort of flowers and things like that that the local groups think the butterflies might like. That they're on the boards and run local community events and fairs and more. And we found that they're incredibly concerned about the economic and social viability of rural Wales. Many spoke of the real impact that second home ownership had on their communities over the years, with a hollowing out effect clear to see. There were concerns that farm buyouts for tree planting were starting to have a similar effect. And some who've been in the industry for decades could point to earlier schemes and decades past where they felt this effect had clearly already taken place and it had done real damage to communities and contributed to that hollowing out effect. They were also really concerned about the lack of new entrants to farming. So their attitude to policy was often seen through this context. They were supportive of measures that could provide resilience to the communities they were so proud of and had examples of community ownership in some of their communities and were very positive about that. And they were sceptical around measures that could impact the ability of the agricultural industry to provide this resilience to these communities and that economic basis for many of these communities. And it's worth noting the Welsh language is really important here. According to Welsh Government statistics, the agricultural industry has by far the largest percentage of Welsh speakers of any industry by quite a bit. And that was reflected at our roundtable. Many Welsh language communities rely on agriculture as an economic basis. Any threat to the agricultural industry in Wales is therefore inherently a threat to the viability of Welsh as a community language and therefore should be treated with the appropriate sensitivity. And then that's our findings. So we'll go to looking ahead and our recommendations. So given these findings, we can now look ahead. We put forward 5 recommendations as a result of our research and have commissioned YouGov to poll on 4 of them. This was a sample size of 1,008 and the figures are representative of all those aged 16 plus in Wales. So our first recommendation states that the Welsh Government should begin work on a community empowerment bill that establishes a register of community assets and gives communities a statutory right of first refusal over these assets when they are proposed for sale or transfer. We state that this needs to be for market value to protect the viability of the agricultural industry and its importance to rural communities in the Welsh language as well. And we specifically don't recommend the ability to purchase without a willing seller for this reason, because the Welsh context is different. And now for the polling on this recommendation. As you can see, that's just the question there. And then there's widespread support for this measure, as we'll zoom in now, with 68% in support of some kind and only 8% opposed to a community empowerment bill. And then you've got 24% don't know. So there's a really tiny chunk that oppose this and the vast majority of people support it. It's not shown here, but actually the support is pretty much evenly spread. Every subset demographic that polled was really in favor of this idea. So that supporters of all parties, Remain and Leave, all genders, social class and all regions of Wales support this measure in pretty similar numbers. Recommendation two is, we'll just move the slide. Recommendation two, our second recommendation is for a well-financed community asset fund to be established based on the successful Scottish Land Fund. Funding isn't in as bad a place in Wales as statutory rights are, but we still thought there was a scope for it to be better financed. And we've recommended this community asset fund be dedicated to underpinning the Community Empowerment Bill's recommendations or priorities, and to ensure sellers get a fair price for their assets as well. Our polling on this recommendation actually has the strongest support of any of our recommendations. So there's the question there that we asked, and 71% in total support the proposal and only 8% oppose it, and there's 22% don't knows. Again, as with the first recommendation, it's supported amongst all polled subsections of Wales. Our third recommendation, as we will come to now, this was for the Welsh Government to establish a coordinated support package to support communities that are seeking to buy or lease land or assets. We recommend that it's particularly targeted at deprived communities because of the concerns that were raised with us that because of how tough this process is, deprived communities might not have the spare time or the resources or, you know, the experience in their community to grapple with the process. So we think there should be a support package particularly targeted to deprived communities to help them make a success of these community assets when they take them over. Again, the polling, there's overwhelming support among the Welsh public for this proposal with a total of six, there we go, there's the question. And the results are 67% in favour, only 9% opposed anyway, and then about a quarter of people don't know again. Fourth recommendation is one on social value policy. And we recommend that social value policy is adopted for public bodies by the Welsh Government. It should be auditable and communicated clearly with local authorities, public bodies and Audit Wales. We want public bodies to have confidence when dispensing of assets to community groups. They should feel free not to give assets out simply to the highest seller, but also to those who offer wider social benefits, such as to the community or to the environment. And again, on the polling, we found strong support for this recommendation. We did it slightly different this time, but 59% said assets should be offered to whoever offers the wider social benefits, even if it is a lower price. And only 8% of the Welsh public wanted the asset to be sold to the highest bidder, regardless of the wider social benefits. So there's very, very clear support for a social value policy when dispensing public assets. And then our fifth and final recommendation, which we didn't poll on. Oh, there we go. There's the zoom in on the polling. Big support for number four. So then our fifth recommendation, which we didn't poll on, it is just to recognise that sometimes asset transfer is not possible or desirable, but in these situations, the Welsh Government should support public bodies to co-produce with communities as equal partners future asset management plans. And this is partially based on the excellent work that Project Skyline have undertaken with Natural Resources Wales to ensure that community views are heard. And that brings us to the end of our findings. I hope that you find that presentation interesting. We will have a short section for questions now, but if anything comes up after the meeting that you think of, please do feel free to send it over to us. As mentioned, this was only a limited scoping report, and we're hoping to turn it into a much larger project in the future, for which we'll be, you know, if we get there, we'll be seeking lots of partners to work with. So please do get in touch if you'd like to be part of this project, and we'll be sure to keep your details on the file. I will now pass back to Auriel to chair the questions.
Brilliant. Thanks very much indeed, Harry. Great to go through things again in detail and to see the responses in the chat. I'm going to go to questions now. We've got a few questions that are coming through. Becca, would you like to join us? The first question is for you, and it's from Neil Harris at Cardiff University, who's asking, did you encounter any opposition to the proposal from within the community? And if you did, how did you manage that?
We were anticipating this, actually. because we had spoken to people before we were planning to do this project, and there was a possibility that that could happen. Not everyone in the community might have the same vision. And we were really surprised that we've not encountered any major problems like this or major opposition. I think there was a few members of the community whose houses were backing onto the site, but because from such an early stage, we've engaged with them at events, we've knocked on doors, we've put flyers through, we've been really open about what this project is going to be and as clear as possible. We've had nothing but support. And I know that's not the same for every community. I know it does sometimes only take a few negative voices or oppose things to make things really difficult. So we've been really lucky in this respect. But I think it was to do with the duration that we talked to the community about the project and the length of time it took to get from nothing to established.
That's really interesting. And you referred when you spoke to, there have obviously been difficult moments in the intervening years to get to this point. Without wanting to make you relive any particularly traumatic episodes at all, could you maybe share with us what you think you wish you hadn't done, so that others can learn from that?
Absolutely. So I think we went into this quite naively, thinking we had a patch of land, and of course everything was just going to go our way to be able to make this a wonderful space for the community, because who would oppose that? Who would make this difficult for us? And the answer was that everything made it difficult for us. I just think we really underestimated the things that were going to come up. And a lot of them, as just community members, people running a social enterprise, we had no experience of being a developer, and we were absolutely instantly put in the shoes of a developer. And as I think Harry referred to in his report, we were treated with a lot of disrespect at certain stages, not taken seriously. It was never said directly, but it came across in lots of the meetings we had that I don't think anyone thought this was ever going to really happen. Not anyone, some of the people we came up against in this process. So it was getting over those barriers, as well as the big things that you have to go through as a developer. Stepping into those shoes was really difficult without knowing what to expect. We've certainly learned a lot coming out the other side of it, and we are happy to talk to other community groups that might be sort of beginning this process and to share that. But the process ends up being a little bit different for everyone. And I think that's why it's really important that something legislation is put in place that provides that pathway and that support to make that process clear. We were in many cases, we like, oh, we can't be the first people doing this. And in some cases we were, especially with things like SUDs. We were the first community group, as far as we can work out, to go through and have a SAB approval and not be a developer. So
that's really helpful. So interesting, it's not just the process or the lack of it, obviously, that's one thing. And obviously what you didn't talk about there was the fact that, you know, I suspect that all the people who were doing this, they had other stuff to do, either day jobs or caring responsibilities or whatever, this was all being on top of. It wasn't just,
absolutely,
I can spend 9 to 5 or whatever just doing this on the one hand. So there's stuff around process, but there's also stuff around attitudes and behaviours, that cultural stuff around what would you expect a community to be doing. And that's some of the kind of stuff that we would like to pick through on hopefully the next phase of this work, but also thinking through how rights enshrined in legislation can help make that just a non-issue. It is your right. So that balance there. Thank you, Becca.
Thank you.
I've got some questions for Harry now. Harry, your first one comes from, I feel like a chat show host now, your first question comes from Gary Mitchell of Social Farms and Gardens, who's joining us for Mid Wales, who says, is he right in thinking that councils, including town and community councils, and I know that we've got Lynn Cadwallader on the call as well, so Lynn, do jump in on the chat on this as well, do still have rights or powers to compulsory purchase or lease land for things such as allotments, although we don't believe this power has ever been used for this purpose?
Yeah, I've heard that their community councils do have the right for compulsory purchase. Lynn Cadwallader on the call will obviously know better than me. But in terms of whether it's ever been used for this purpose, I'm not sure. But I've heard through our research that community councils definitely do have that compulsory purchase.
Okay. I know that there are a number of representatives from local authorities in Wales here with us today. Certainly I saw somebody here from RCT and from Pembrokeshire. So do please add a comment in the chat on that. Your next question is about why is there a distinction? They haven't given their name, which is totally fine. Why is there a distinction between the right to bid and the right to buy between the nations? Is this a devolved issue?
Yeah, this is a devolved issue. It's complex where the powers lie in some cases. Wales has what's called it used to have something called a conferred powers model of devolution, where Westminster told Wales what powers it was allowed to have, and it moved to a more Scottish-style system called reserved powers, where Westminster just decides which powers it wants to keep for itself, and then Wales has all the ones outside of it. The list of reservations that Westminster keeps is longer in Wales than it is in Scotland. And one of the things that is reserved to Westminster is certain provisions over the administration of land, which could make this slightly more complex for Wales to do than in Scotland. However, it's not all land. And Wales does have huge powers over land, including agriculture and things like economic development. So the simple question is, it's a devolved issue. Scotland has widespread powers over it, and it's the Scottish government that has led this in Scotland. Wales has powers over it, and it was the Welsh government looking at this before deciding to drop it, with the previous minister in Leslie Griffiths. And because it's a devolved issue, it is the UK government who have led on this for England in terms of the Localism Act. If you really want to get into the constitutional nerd stuff, the Localism Act 2011 was actually going through Parliament at the same time as the Further Powers referendum for Wales. So there was a bit of confusion at the start of whether Wales could implement the Localism Act in England for Wales. In the end, the Welsh government decided that it could, but decided not to because they wanted to develop their own system, but that wasn't forthcoming in the end.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sure there are lots of constitutional nerds on the call as well today. So thank you for that. I'm going to a question from Rhiannon Barra to Becca, please. Could you talk a little bit about, once a project's up and running, how easy or difficult is it to keep going?
So we're on the cusp of this.
You know, it's the kind of, how do you sustain that energy?
Yeah, so we are on the cusp of this. And I think because of lockdown, we have kind of experienced a situation where we could have lost momentum quite easily, and we were worried that that would happen during lockdown. However, the exact opposite happened, because in lockdown the communities in Adams Down and Splott became even more cohesive, and they felt like they really wanted something to look forward to and work towards. So we managed to get sort of continued support and activity throughout that time, but we really worked hard on a business plan for this project, a five-year plan that went into our funding applications that looked to make the project sustainable in the long term. So even though we're currently reliant on funding to get us set up, and for the first 3 years, and probably a little bit beyond that, we'll need top-ups, but the business plan is showing how we can generate income from the project and custodians of the project, because it really has been driven by the community. So we want to hand that back to the community, but we've yet to see how that will go. Our community are very excited at the moment. We're working on what programme events and activities we're going to be running on site, led by the community and some by Green Squirrel. Keeping the momentum going can be a struggle through unforeseen circumstances, but the key to it is having an engaged community and keeping them really informed along the way. We told them the ups, we told them the downs, we admitted when things weren't going right, we asked for help, and I think that has put us in good stead.
And that takes a lot of time, effort, resources as well to do that, doesn't it? Harry, going to come back to you, but a question here from John Healy. Do you think that there should be restrictions on the rights of land owners to sell their land to the highest bidder? That's kind of the first bit. And have the farming unions indicated that such a restriction would be acceptable to the farming community?
Not that I've had from farming unions in terms of whether we believe that there should be restrictions on the rights of landowners to sell their land to the highest bidder. I mean, there is inherently a restriction in to the highest bidder into if you're saying the community have the right to buy it. What's important is that you get a fair price for it, and that's not it's not undervalued. So how it works, I think, you know, this is something for the Welsh Government to work on when they're developing community asset legislation. But Scotland has done a pretty workable system of making sure there's an independent valuer when communities take up that option to buy the asset. They the Scottish ministers have to appoint an independent valuer to tell what the market price is, the market value is for that asset within 8 weeks. So I think that's a really fair way of doing it. I think there's obviously, when you're looking at this agenda, there is a counterbalance between the rights of the sellers and the rights of communities. I think making sure that people get that market value, what an independent valuer has said they would get on the market, protects that right of seller. And I think at the moment, as we've heard from Becca and as we heard in our research, that balance is way out of whack towards communities compared to other parts of Britain at the moment. So we didn't want to be too prescriptive with how that Community Empowerment Act would work, apart from the community right to buy, which has been suggested by, I think Chris Johns has said in the chat, by many, many organisations working on community development for a long time. The Welsh Government has had, like, you know, two commissions on this, which have both recommended it. Their own research has kind of backed it up, and it just kind of fell from the agenda. So we were happy to say a right to buy, but then I think in terms of that highest bidder, I think the answer is market value, really, would be the first option to look at anyway.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think that point and the point that Chris makes is, you know, some of this isn't new. It's been going around for a long time. But this is also to do with either vested interests kind of issues, but also the lack of clarity and nobody sort of holding the ring between what you might have thought were quite opposing situations, but actually, because there's no clarity on process and because there's no clarity in terms of rights and the way that we would want to see them, it's a very confusing, difficult, disrespectful process and is much more complicated than it needs to be. That issue around market value leads on nicely, so well done, to the next question, which is from Owain Hanmer from Cardiff University, which is, how likely, and here you get your political radars on, how likely is this to materialise politically in reality, especially given that local authorities will have an interest in the greatest economic value from the assets or from the land, selling to developers rather than empowering communities? This seems to him to be the primary conflict.
Yeah, I mean, well, it hasn't happened so far, so it's it can be tricky to put in. I think, you know, we haven't had one thing I'll say though is we haven't had a huge level of opposition in anyone we've spoken to in any sort of stakeholder context. Lots of people, you know, lots of local authorities want to support communities and have their communities be, you know, thriving, vibrant communities. We've, you know, had support from a lot of MSs, cross-party support. Lots of people who we've spoken to have seen pretty similar issues in their communities. I've had quite a few DMs since we had the Politics Wales piece last week. So I think actually there is actually a very wide and broad but kind of shallow level of support for this, in the sense that lots of people think it's a pretty good idea. And the fact that we've got a reasonably clear roadmap of different options and different policies we can almost take off the shelf in Scotland and England and improve on for a Welsh context means that in some ways, it's a popular policy as we polled, and it's a relatively cheap policy too, in terms of the amount the Welsh Government have to spend, 20 million a year in Scotland. It would be less sort of, for a Welsh population, isn't going to break the bank for the Welsh Government. So in some ways, you know, it hasn't happened yet. In other ways, what we've got is a popular, cheap policy that seems to have cross-party support. So I think legislation takes time, but there is huge potential there for this. You know, if anything was going to end up in legislation, I could see I could see this being one of them.
Yeah, so there's something about, there's an issue here, we've got this, you know, wide and shallow support right across political parties, but also across different interest groups, because we had anticipated to find a much more conflictual situation when we first started this piece of work, and that hasn't materialised. Becca, I'm coming back to you. There's a question here from Katie Lloyd. Do you think your project benefited from being in Cardiff, either because of visibility or connectivity? And do you think you might have struggled more in the valleys or rural areas of Wales, or the rural areas of Wales?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's hard to say because my experience is specifically of working on the project in Cardiff. We were able to use connections that were built up in the area. And I guess each local authority is going to have a different approach, and it might be a case of who you know or who you can get to speak to. But I know the Community Land Advisory Service do work widely across Wales, and that their support was integral. But also that the key thing was about the community getting behind it. So if wherever you are in Wales, if you've got a community that's going to get behind this and they really want to make their voices heard, then that determination is, that's what goes a long way.
Yeah, and I think your point about who you can get to see and who you know is a point well made, because it shouldn't be like that.
No.
Full stop. There's a question here that's come through from Rob, and I'm going to partially answer it myself, actually, Harry, but I'm going to open it for you, because Rob Thompson is asking, can the IWA follow up on this discussion? Well, we certainly hope to, and the publication of the report by collating some of the horror stories of land privatisation and commercialisation across Wales. Well, I'm going to let you answer that in a minute, Harry, but actually, Rob, that's not going to change anything. We want to make change happen. So the question is, how do you build the consensus, show the way forward in a way that demonstrates pragmatic optimism, which is our general approach? There are examples in the report, and obviously we've spoken to lots of people in the report, and they've shared their experience very, very frankly, but they've also done so under Chatham House rules and anonymously, because they live in these communities. They work with some of these people. Lots of people wear very different hats. They may work for a local authority, but they also live in the same community. So there are different ties and accountabilities here. So we really hope that we'll be following up on this report and doing a longer piece of work. Harry, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just that Rob has also given quite a challenging question that I really liked, saying, Harry, saying there's broad support in the Senedd, isn't this just talk? And I think, yes, until it's action, it is just talk. We gave a sort of preliminary report on some of these findings to the cross-party group on cooperatives. And one of the things I ended my speech by saying there was that we need action from decision makers in Wales. You know, this, like Chris has said and others have said, this agenda has been around for a long time. There is a pretty, you know, we've got the WCVA have done a really good job in bringing some people together to talk about this. There's pretty broad consensus on our recommendations from people who've been working on this for a long time. And with that sort of wide support that we've seen in the Senedd so far, yeah, it is just talks. What I ended my speech by saying, now what we need now is flag bearers in the Senedd to push this through, to make sure that this talk becomes action, these warm words become action. And that doesn't just apply to, you know, members of the Senedd, that applies to everyone as well. You know, get writing to your Senedd members about our reports, and hopefully we can turn it to action.
Thank you, Harry. So a responsibility for all of us in that mix. And certainly we would very much like to be helping lead whatever comes next, because there's no vested interest in this for us as an organisation. It's about making sure the benefits accrue to communities right across Wales. A question here for Becca, I'm going to come to you with this first, from Cara Wilson. Would it be a good option to have a full-time permanent community asset officer in every local authority to support and empower communities, ease the process, access funding and so forth?
It certainly would have made our life a lot easier to have a dedicated person to speak to and go to. We were really scrabbling about to find out who we needed to speak to. First, we were talking to the Parks Department, then Strategic Estates, and it felt like no one wanted to take us on. Yeah. So to have a dedicated person would make a huge difference.
Yeah. Harry?
Yeah, I'd just add that the Welsh Government has commissioned its own research, which found that I think it was only 5 of the local authorities, the 22 local authorities in Wales, have a full-time permanent community asset officer. it may have even been that only have a dedicated person doing it, not just a full-time permanent community asset officer. And when you hear that, because that is the main, in terms of guidance and rights, that is the main policy in Wales at the moment for these community asset transfers. And the fact that most local authorities don't have a person in charge of this, it makes, when you hear Becca's story and the story of other community groups we've spoken to, who say that they just don't know who to talk to and they get passed from department to department, it makes it very unsurprising. So, you know, I think that would be a good first step, Cara, to be honest.
A good focal point. Great, thank you very much indeed. We've got a minute to go. We always finish on time. So thank you very much indeed to Harry for talking us through the work that you've done over the last year, to Becca Clark of Green Squirrel, and especially to all of you who've joined us today. Great to see such a good turnout and contributing to the discussion. Do please let us know if you'd like to stay in touch with us on this piece of work. We are pragmatically optimistic also about carrying on and doing another chunk on it. Our particular thanks also to the Friends Provident Charitable Foundation and the Esme Fairbairn Foundation for funding our scoping work on land use. In a moment, you will see a feedback survey in the link. Really, we'd really, really, really appreciate it if you take a minute to complete it, please. It helps us identify what we can do differently, better, and also what sort of topics and themes are of interest to you, because what we try and do is really take that sort of medium to long-term view, look at issues that need further thought, articulate clearly why they matter, get people thinking about what needs to change, how it needs to change, and why it needs to change, and who needs to be involved, so that we can all play our own part in making Wales better, which is the IWRA's mission. If you also want to receive early notifications of future IWRA events, recording for them, please do join us as a member. On the link is going to go in the chat now. Thank you very much indeed, Jochen Valian.